Welcome to Career Tools. This week, communication media, there's rules. The questions this cast answers are, how do I choose which method to use when communicating? What's wrong with email? And what kind of things should I be thinking about when communicating? The thing about communication, I think, is that there's so many ways to communicate with people. Like, it used to be in the olden days when we were cave people, there was only one way to communicate, and that was like face-to-face or yelling. I guess you could be farther apart. But now you could, there's phone and text and email and IM, and somebody just tried to tell me about WhatsApp, and now I have another thing on my phone that has a big red bubble over it, and Andrew, I'll reply to you eventually.
You could just turn off the bubbles.
I could, and then I'd never know that Ananda had WhatsApp to me, and I hadn't replied still. And then you and I are talking on Skype, there's Zoom, there's this. It just seems like there's a million ways to communicate now. And the funny thing is that people nearly always resort to email. If you're in a company, everyone communicates by email, even though there's 50 other ways to communicate. And so the question is not, should we communicate? That's probably the first question. But the question we're going to answer now is, what's the best way to communicate? What's the best out of all these different options that we have? What is the best way to communicate? And that depends on the situation, the topic, the timing, the preferences of the people you're with, the number of times that you've already communicated this issue, a whole bunch of things. So in this cast, we're going to give you a list of things to consider before you can communicate that will help you choose between all those different options.
We're going to talk about, we need to think about this by urgency, by topic, by the response that's required, according to that person's personal preference. And we're going to also talk about that we need to pay attention to the recipient's reaction to our communication mode.
And nearly always it's not email.
It's email less often than you think.
Exactly. The first one we have is by urgency.
Yeah. If something is really urgent, it has to be a phone call, right? I mean, that's the most reliable, most, makes the most sense, most obvious choice, I guess, when you think about it, right? It's, I used to say to people, if the building was on fire, would you send an email? And of course, the answer is no, you wouldn't. You would call someone or go find them, right? Imagine saying to your colleague, your peer, or somebody, it's urgent, I have to talk to my boss, and then sending a letter or a fax. You wouldn't do that, right? Urgent means I require immediate action or attention. So it's not enough that you just send a message. It's really imperative that the person who receives it gives it their attention or acts upon it right away, right? Urgently. It's also important, too, that you know that the message has been heard and acted upon. Something urgent requires action very often. And so if the power goes out in your building or in your house, you don't want to just send a message to the maintenance team because it's asynchronous. You don't know when or if they'll receive it, which means you don't know when or if they'll action it. So what you want to know is that they heard you, that the power's out, and they're doing something about it. So you would call, right? Or you would go talk to them in person. If it's urgent but not critical, like your boss needs to know about a change of plans as soon as he comes out of his office, so he goes to the right place or something, you know, it's urgent, but it's not super, super important. Like, for example, if the building isn't burning down, perhaps you'd send a text because there's some speed associated with that. However, real urgency usually means that you need to know that the person has heard your message. And unless you hear from them that they have, you can't know that. So a phone call is really the first option in terms of things that are urgent.
Which is why we all call the electric company when our electric goes out. Because we can assume that perhaps if our electric's gone out and we look out the window and the whole street has gone dark, then we can think, well, probably somebody else has phoned. And a lot of the time, you know, the bystander effect means that if there's a group of people and something happens and one person really should take action, if there's a bunch of people, nobody takes action because of this thing called the bystander effect, which is if there's a bunch of people, you don't want to be the person who stands out by taking action, even if there's a fight or someone needs CPR or something really desperate. A lot of the time people don't help. If there's more, if there's one person, they'll help. If there's 10 people, nobody will help because of this bystander effect. But if your electric goes out, you could think, well, maybe somebody else has called, but you don't ever leave it. You nearly always, you call the electric company yourself because you want to know, yes, we already know, or yes, we know that your electric's out and we're working on it. Urgency is not just the speed of the message or the importance of the message. It's about knowing that the person knows the piece of information that you need them to know and are taking action upon it. That's why when it's urgent, it needs to be a phone call so that you can hear their response.
Absolutely. And there's a lot of other options out there, as we've already discussed. So you might think, okay, we could use an internal system, IM or Slack or something like that. But whether or not the person looks at your message often really depends on your relationship with them. If you're a salesperson and you get a message from a client that their service is broken, you might send an urgent IM to someone who should be fixing that. However, if you're one of the people that that person deals with, and your IM is not on their really urgent people list, right? If it's not on the flash bright red when this person IMs me list, then the service person who should be fixing it might not see it right away. They might not be aware.
Their IM probably only flashes if their boss or someone else important to them IMs them. If you are one among many of their people that they should be helping, then they may be important to you, but you're not important to them. And the only way we have our IM set up is according to importance to us. And so just because someone is important to you, that in that your client is, you know, throwing up a stink and you need it fixed, just because that's important to you, it doesn't mean it's important to the person who's going to fix it. And so you can't rely on the importance to you making that IM urgent to them.
Absolutely. This doesn't work that way. It doesn't work both ways, right?
No, exactly.
In 2018, the number of actual phone calls made declined for the first time ever. Isn't that crazy? And really, calling signifies urgency and ensures that your communication isn't missed in the big pile of other communications, right? I mean, if you've got a bunch of red bubbles on your phone, then the thing that will actually set apart the communication is the phone call. We have bubbles all the time. Your phone has a ton of red bubbles. Well, we need to set aside and say, yeah, this is more important than that. This is more urgent than that. And it needs to be discussed right away. Some people are thinking, oh, well, urgent emails are a thing. That's so cute. They're not. Emails are never, ever urgent, ever, because they're asynchronous, right? The whole point of an email is that it's asynchronous, that the other person isn't required to be on the other end of that communication. That's how email is defined in terms of communication standards. And so sending an email that's urgent assumes that the person you're sending to spends all day in and out of their email, right? That they're looking at their email. We hear this a lot, like, oh, we have an email culture. But you can never assume that. They could be doing any number of things. They could be not at their desk. They could be getting a coffee. And we just really hope that you're using our guidance to only check email 3 times a day. We have a podcast about that. And we have another podcast about getting out of jail, like meeting jail. But I always think of it as getting out of email jail, like email 3 times a day. And that would mean that a person who gets an email from you, whether it's urgent, whether it's marked urgent or not, isn't in their inbox all day. And so you're not in your inbox. They're not in their inbox. They could be in a meeting, a training. They could be at a doctor's appointment. There's 1,000 other reasons that they could be not looking at email right now. And therefore, guess what? Your urgent email isn't going to get to them in an urgent way.
And if it's urgent, you have to call. If you get voicemail, which you might well get voicemail, at least you know that the person you're trying to contact hasn't got your message yet. And so you can start finding alternate ways to solve your problem, or you can just keep calling. It depends what it is. If it has to be that person, then you can keep calling, or you call one of their colleagues and say, hey, have you seen so-and-so? Because I'm really trying to get hold of him. If you text or IM or email, you really have no way of knowing if your message has been received or not. And read receipts are not reliable. Unless you get a reply, you can't know that your message was received. And if it's urgent and you need action to be taken, you need to know that your message was received and you need to know that the person is taking action.
Receiving a message doesn't mean that I'm doing anything about it.
Receiving and saying that I've read it doesn't mean that I've actually read it, taken it in, and I'm taking action.
I know. And this is going to scare some people, but sometimes messages end up on read because the other person hasn't closed the text window.
That too.
I mean, there's people out there panicking right now, right? They're thinking like, oh my gosh. Oftentimes, Maggie and I will text constantly throughout the day, and she sends me a text, the first text, and then she sends me another. And I see the first one, and then I step away from my phone, and the phone doesn't shut off, right? The screen doesn't shut off. And so that second message says read, when in fact, I could be getting a coffee or something, you know? So don't panic, guys. But just because it says read doesn't mean that the contents of your message were actually received mentally.
For those of you who've listened to Manage Your Tools for a while, you'll probably know Mark and Mike started the company with the sole intent to make the individual manager more effective with managerial guidance, actionable behaviors, and tools. And while that's still our focus, we know we can help more managers when we work with larger groups within organizations. We've made our client on-site training very affordable, and we'll work with 25 to 30 people. Contact Maggie at manager-tools.com to learn more about our three standard training days: effective manager, effective communicator, and effective hiring manager. Or check it out at manager-tools.com.
How about by topic? That's our next discussion. We really need to think about the topic of our communication.
It stands to reason that any sensitive topic needs to be talked about face-to-face, if at all possible. And when we say if at all possible, this may take some effort on your part. If a person is 150 miles away, you can drive there, even if it's inconvenient to you. Even a stay overnight isn't unreasonable. And if the company can afford it, nor is a flight. If you're going to be fired, wouldn't you want your boss or whoever is going to fire you to come and say that to you and be able to see them while you have that conversation? There's that movie Up in the Air, which everybody thinks is about airline points. Is it George Clooney?
Mm-hmm. It is.
Yeah. What him and the girl in it are doing is firing people by video chat. Part of the reason that that gets into the movie as something, you know, that's interesting enough to be in a movie is that firing people really shouldn't be done by video chat.
Right.
You can feel that when you watch the movie. You feel bad for the people that are being fired that way. So if you're going to have a sensitive topic, and it doesn't need to be as bad as firing, but it could be about somebody's performance. It could be about, you know, something, if you want to talk to your boss about something personal that's going on with you that's affecting your work, then you need to try as hard as possible to make that face-to-face. Now, if your boss was coming to fire you, anything short of heroic wouldn't be enough. You know, if you were 300 miles away, that's still driving distance, just about.
In Texas.
If your boss said, no, it's too far to drive, so I'm just giving you a phone call, you'd feel hard done by, and reasonably so. If you're in the position of having to initiate that sensitive conversation, be prepared to get up and go to that person. And if you really can't, if that person is on the other side of the world, if you were in New York and LA, it depends on the company and what the flight situation is, but I guess you could get away with that. Then if you really can't be with that person, then it has to be video or a phone call. You cannot talk about sensitive topic like performance or pay by instant message or email. It's just not fair.
Yeah. It feels disrespectful, mm-hmm. I guess, too. So topics where people have vested interests, right, such as negotiations, also really need to be face-to-face if that's possible. If someone is entrenched in their position, it's really difficult to persuade them to a new way of thinking over the phone or by email. It's really face-to-face that changes those kinds of opinions and ideas. You know, vocal quality, facial expressions are really important to show that you understand someone else's position, even if you're arguing that that position could be changed or modified. There's just subtleties there, you know, in our body language and things like that. And it's both respectful and honestly more effective to meet someone face to face in this scenario.
What we didn't include in the show notes, but occurs to me now, is that if you are trying to negotiate or persuade someone, it's the times before and after or in between meetings when you're face to face that often the rapport is built up between you, which is not about the negotiation, but makes the negotiation easier. It's those moments when you say, hey, do you want a coffee? I'm just going to, and somebody says, oh, you know what? I can't drink coffee after 2 p.m. I just can't sleep. And you say, really? I don't have that trouble. And it's a little conversation about nothing at all, really. But it's a little point of commonality, a little point of personal interaction that then makes the real stuff, the hard stuff, easier. That's another reason for being face-to-face, if you can.
If you really can't, the video or phone are the only other way to get there as well. Same as before, you know, if it's something like sensitive or something with vested interest, it's video or phone. There's another thing here, there's complicated issues, right? Things where there's multiple stakeholders or something that's really best discussed with a diagram or topics with lots of similar words. Oh, my favorite version of this is a place where, if you've ever worked in a place with lots of acronyms,
oh yes,
then this kind of topic, these coverage ideas, these options, they really need to be discussed face to face. Oh gosh, I can't even imagine just the acronym stuff that you'd have to go through sometimes. But you can really tell from someone's body language what thing they are talking about, what they mean when you see them talking about it.
Or if it's acronyms, if the person understands that acronym in the same way that you do. The electricity company in San Antonio is called CPS, City Public Services, I think it stands for. But in my head, because I lived in the UK for so long, it's Crown Prosecution Service, which is the people who bring criminal cases against people. And the other one is Child Protective Services, often comes up in my mind, which is a common American abbreviation. So if you say something and the person opposite is like, hold on, that acronym makes no sense in that sentence, you can see it on their face and go back and tell them or explain or say, sorry, I just used an acronym. Let me try that again, in a way that you cannot do on a phone call or even on video. It's hard to see people's expressions, but it's hard to concentrate on looking at them and getting the nonverbal stuff.
Well, especially if there's multiple people. So you're looking at the wrong person on the video. And I don't know, some of our video services, they hide some people. I mean, it's most effective face-to-face or over the phone if you can be there because of that interaction that you get. Micro-communications, that's the word I'm looking for.
Sometimes people count off with their fingers.
Oh, yeah.
Or they'll use hand gestures. I do it while I'm podcasting, which is funny because you can't see it. But when I say New York and LA, I do my left hand and my right hand because they're far apart. But you can't see that. If I did that and you were in the room and maybe you were talking about two places that were much closer and my bad American geography, I got it wrong, you would be able to see that in my gestures in a way that you just can't. Again, you can't do it on the phone or on email. I mean, email is just hopeless for that. And the number of times, you know, people have, somebody flies somewhere and there's two places with the same name and they're in different states, you know, you got to know which one is which. And it's easy to get them wrong. So looking, being able to see people's even unconscious gestures is really, really helpful.
Absolutely. Video also will sometimes work and not always, as we discussed, some people are hidden. Diagrams will help in a lot of these cases with complicated issues. We just need to be careful, and we do need to send that around and stuff like that too if we're sharing
make
those
sure
with the group.
Can see it.
Yeah, make sure everybody can see it. I mean, even with that stuff, it's sometimes hard to get your point across. Communication is hard. The thing is, though, face-to-face is the easiest form. And so every medium you add, it makes it even harder, right? So imagine like you're talking. Okay, great. That's the easiest. Then there's typing. Okay, that makes it harder. So then if you're typing and it's asynchronous, which is what email is, right? We're talking to someone who's not right there right now and we're typing. You're just adding levels of difficulty, layers of interpretation that have to be gone through. It's just making it harder. It's like we're adding a filter every single time, but the filters just make it worse.
Hey y'all, it's Sarah here, letting you know about a rare upcoming opportunity to see all three of our presenters at one event. Kate, Mark, and myself will be presenting our Effective Hiring Manager Conference, better known as the Effective Interviewer Conference, in Palo Alto on March the 12th. The student-teacher ratio at this one will be excellent. Register online at manager-tools.com/training, and we all hope to see you there.
Okay, so buy response required is our next topic.
So anytime you need a yes-no answer or a short answer, you can use any one of the communication methods that are designed for quick communication. So I am text or email. There is a difference between I am and text and email, though. I am and text, the expectation is that they are more or less synchronous. If I send you a text, a work-related text, I expect you to reply in the next hour, hour and a half. That's probably the outside limit of how long you would expect, because I think that you're looking at your text every now and again. And even if you were in an hour-long meeting, then you would look at it either at the end of that meeting or if it was an eight-hour meeting, then in a break, and you would have a break at least every hour and a half. So if I send you a text or an IM, I kind of expect something in the next 90 minutes or so. With email, it's more asynchronous. And so I expect an answer in the next 24 hours, probably the longest. By the close of business day is probably how long I expect an email to go. But it kind of depends on the person. Some people are slower than others. So again, that depends on the person. Only use IM and text if you need an answer right now. Because if you don't, if you use IM and text for everything, all of a sudden, if everything's important, nothing's important. So you blur all the edges of all of the messages and the person can't tell which ones are important. And you use up all your capital in saying, I need an urgent answer for all of these things. And then when you really do need an urgent answer or you need something that's out of the ordinary, you've used up all your goodwill with that person. So being sensitive to people's time and the amount of effort it will take for them to answer, whatever the medium, is a good thing to do. So if you're conscious that I don't really need an answer right now, and I've asked five things in the last 2 days, maybe I'll email, like take it down a notch from IM and text. So if you can wait, then use email.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
And you'll end up with quicker responses from everything because you're using the right method for the right times.
Absolutely. Email will also work for conversations that require more than a yes-no, but which don't require any discussion. So the discussion part is what really keeps email chains going back and forth and back and forth forever. If you find yourself in that situation, then you should just pick up the phone. I mean, you can go on forever in a reply all situation, or even if it's just the two of you, if you can go and see that person, that would be even better than picking up the phone. Once the situation has really devolved into that kind of like going nowhere email discussion we so often see, there's no rescue but a face-to-face or a video or a phone conversation, really. I mean, at some point.
More email doesn't help.
No. In my world, the answer is never more email, just so that if that helps anyone. If all you have is a quick question and you want to really start building relationships, then pick up the phone or drop by, right? Just, hey, how are you doing? Email and text don't build relationships, even if they are faster and easier. In terms of faster and easier with relationships, faster and easier is also never the answer. More email is never the answer, and faster and easier is never the answer for people. fact, slower and harder always seems to be where I end up in terms of relationship status and how to keep those relationships strong and healthy. So
next up we have, according to personal preference, and we don't actually mean yours. So we know from DISC that different styles respond to different communication methods. So if you don't know what DISC is, I'm going to do it high level in 2 seconds. It's a behavioral profiling tool. You answer 28 questions. It gives you a letter or 2 letters, D, I, S, or C. The Ds are the dominant people. They're the loud and decisive people. Is are loud and people-focused. So they're the people who have invited you to the happy hour tonight. Ss are quiet and the glue in teams. They're the ones who brought in cookies last week. And the Cs are quieter and data-driven. They're the ones who have a spreadsheet for everything, including, I don't know, their commute to work and exactly how long it takes and which train carriage they should be in so that they get the most efficient path from the train up the stairs to work. So if you know someone like that, they're probably a C. So I's and S's, because they're people focused, they prefer a personal connection. So a phone call or dropping by, usually. D's prefer email because it's efficient and they don't have to talk to you. And C's would like you to use their Unix-based ticketing system, but they know that not everybody can do Unix, so they've provided you with a nice web portal to put it on front. And if you know the personal preference of the person you're going to communicate with, you can do one of 2 things. Either use the method they prefer or use the method that will work in that situation, but according to their preference. So if we take the non-preferred communication style for each of the styles, we can talk about how we might adapt them. So a high D would prefer email because they like things to be efficient and they're not people focused. They don't feel the need to see you. But if you're going to have a negotiation with them, we've already said negotiation means face to face, or is more efficient, is more effective if you're face to face. So if you're going to have the negotiation, but you know D's prefer email, then tell them what's coming and be short and to the point. So you say to them, I'd like to give you a briefing. I have just 3 slides and 4 points. Or I'd like to ask you a question. I want to briefly summarize the situation, and then I have 2 options. D's like to know, how long is this going to take and when do I get to make the decision?
High I's, in terms of email, okay, we want to be friendly and as casual as your relationship allows, but we really need to make what we need very clear. So you might want to consider texting as well or instead, because we want to be really clear with them about what it is that we're getting at and focusing on.
High I's are the ones who don't answer the email for 3 days or 3 months, come to that. So if you already decided that email is the right thing, but the person is a high I, then you have to do something to help them answer your email, which is text them and tell them they're getting an email from you. High S's, again, would prefer talking to you face-to-face or by phone. So if you've decided that email is the right way to communicate with them, which is not their preference, then be sure to ask them how they are and thank them for their help. So when you start the email, you say, Dear Joe, I hope you're doing well today. Mondays, huh? I need to know if we have X in stock. I really appreciate your help in getting me this information. Best regards, Wendy. It's a long email from a high D perspective who would just have 1 sentence. So it's, do we have X in stock? But for high S's, you need to connect with them, even though you're using their non-preferred style.
For high C's, it's face-to-face. And what we need to focus on is being organized in our conversation. We need to use numbers or body language to mark out different sections. And we need to be really logical and clear about what we actually need and the quality standard that we require. High C's really like clarity and precision. So we got to be careful with that.
The last part is probably the most important part. We probably should have put this first, which is pay attention to the recipient's reaction. So you have to be careful not to assume people's personal preferences. Just because someone is a high I, that doesn't mean that they have never adapted to being better at email than most high I's. We can generalize. High I's are generally not good at email. But that doesn't mean the high I that you know isn't good at email. You know, anybody can change their behavior. Anybody can get good at most business things if they pay attention. And maybe this person has paid attention and can do email.
Yeah, maybe they have. Maybe not also. The best way to figure out whether or not your message is getting through using the method you've chosen is to pay attention to their reaction. Did you get the response that you need? If you're, for example, texting a high I, but you don't get an answer, despite what we know about high I's, then we might choose another medium. Say, okay, I'm not getting a response to my text. That says to me that I need to choose a different way of doing this. If you've tried the less complicated mediums, like IM or text, then maybe try email and see how that works. If it doesn't work, then we would recommend going to the phone or video or face-to-face. We often have a tendency to choose the less intensive modes of communication because energy conservation makes a lot of sense. However, when you do and those methods don't work, we do need to move to a different mode because, of course, we want to make sure they do hear our message and that it's communicated. As it's often said, doing the same thing over and over again is the definition of insanity. So continuing to email someone who's not responding or text or something like that, email someone who's not responding just means that you're not doing your job, I guess. If your job is for them to hear you and get back to you with an answer.
So the mode of communication you choose depends on the topic, the response required, and the personal preference of the person with whom you're communicating. And you can layer on top of that urgency. And that's a lot more than most of us think of when we communicate every day. You think, oh, I need to ask so-and-so something. You bring up your email and you start emailing. But making a well-thought-out decision makes for more effective communication first time. A lot of the time we'll send an email and we'll end up in one of those email chains that goes backwards and forwards. And then we'll wonder, why am I here? Now I have to go to the phone. But if you'd have phoned the first time, you wouldn't have been in that, you know, however long that email chain is and however much time you invested into it.
Mm-hmm.
So thinking about it first saves you time in the long run. Nobody ever has enough time. So saving time is a good thing.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Kate.
Thanks, Wendy.
That's all this week. We'll be back next week with more guidance.